Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rodrigo for Asensio, and now Valverde, oh yes!
What a goal.
What a goal! Is there anything this man cannot do? Everything he touches right now turns to gold. A thunderbolt, a beauty, a screamer from Valverde.
La Liga Lowdown. Today, relentless Real Madrid, another French kiss for Atleti, unwanted records, unnecessary red cards, 5-star Rayo, a Korean KO for Gattuso, more points for Pacheta's Pucela, and Valverde's return to Camp Nou ends in a heavy defeat.
La del otro día.
Hello everyone and welcome to this Matchday 11 recap. I'm your host Matt Clark and I'm delighted to be joined from Barcelona by Roman Darquer. He's enjoyed seeing Barca thrash Athletic Club 4-0 and we will start at the top of the table because Real Madrid extended their lead to 6 points on Saturday evening with a win over Sevilla 3-1, and of course Barca had to respond on Sunday night, which they duly did. Atleti also had a win away at Betis to complete the top 3. And it now looks quite a familiar big three in La Liga. So let's start then, Roman, with Real Madrid's win over Sevilla. An early goal from Modric, brilliantly created by Vinny. It looked like it was going to be a long night for Sampaoli's side. But to be fair, they kind of stayed in the game, got level through Eric Lamela. And then it was quite late on that the champions eventually pulled away with goals from Lucas Vazquez and then Fede Valverde's now customary goal from outside the box. First of all, what did you make of their performance and how good was it from them to win against a big side like Sevilla?
Well, I mean, it kind of feels like Madrid a bit invincible now at the moment, because even if they're not at their best, I mean, they're still getting the results. You know, that's I think, one of the main characteristics of this Real Madrid by Ancelotti, you know, that whatever, you know, the mood is or whether they're playing well or not, you know, in the end they get the 3 points or they get something, you know, and that's what's really allowing them to seem like such a strong and powerful side. And against Sevilla, honestly, I honestly didn't expect Sevilla to put up a fight, but you know, they got the 1-1 draw. It seemed like maybe they could do something, and maybe when Sevilla were a bit better, we could say, on the field, that's when Real Madrid, you know, found their opportunity, as they tend to do, you know, and they just have this capability of finding goals out of nowhere. Their counterattacks are just tremendous, and Lucas Vazquez, of course, put them in front with that 2-1, and then again Fede Valverde with one of his classics, as you said, outside the box goals, sealed the deal. A bit unfair maybe for Sevilla, who deserved a bit more. I think that 3-1 might be a big scoreline for Real Madrid, but you know, that's what they do. They keep within the game, within winning distance all the time, every time, and in the end they get what they need, which are the points or the results.
Yeah, you mentioned that invincibility of Real Madrid. It's interesting because last season, you know, their backbone was Thibaut Courtois and Karim Benzema, two fundamental players for them. But this season, the two of them have only played together in 6 of the 16 games so far this season. They both missed quite large chunks. Benzema missing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, Courtois back, but Benzema missing in this game. So,
yep.
Can anyone stop them? Can anyone beat them?
It's a good question. I mean, I do think at some point they they will lose games, whether it's in the Champions League or in the Liga. I mean, they did draw against Osasuna, who really put up a fight there, and they did really well to prevent them from scoring, from getting more goals, I'd say. But it is true that they look so solid, and I think I mentioned this in the previous pod with you or Rory, that this season Real Madrid just look really, really solid. You know, it doesn't matter that Benzema isn't sharp, or that Courtois isn't there, or that some other player isn't performing. The team as a whole is really compact and really solid, and Ancelotti has kind of taken the team a step forward, I think, this season, and they look even more competitive in that sense, you know, where they get what they need, even if they have worse circumstances or they have certain problems. They just overcome those, you know, with the rest of their players, and Fede Valverde stepping up, Rodrigo, etc. It's just proof of that, you know. So it's hard to say, but I do think at some point they should lose a game. I don't really see them being invincible right until the end, but so far, man, it's been really impressive for them.
Yeah, I suppose the question will be asked the longer it continues. I have to ask then, Fede Valverde, highly praised by pretty much everyone who's seen him play this season. Ancelotti was singing his praises. He's been compared to Steven Gerrard in his peak. Is Valverde the best player in the league right now?
I mean, that's too much for me, honestly. For example, in the Clásico, I thought Kroos was the better player in that game, even though Valverde was fantastic. I mean, Fede is scoring goals, but if he wasn't scoring these wonder goals from outside the box, maybe he wouldn't be talked about as much. Of course, he's still really fundamental for them and doing really good, but to say he's the best player in the La Liga, for me, you know, it's a step too far. Like Lewandowski, you know, he's still getting goals. There's plenty of talented players who are doing well in La Liga, and other players that, you know, maybe don't shine as much because they don't score goals, but they're there, you know, doing hard work. So I don't like saying a guy is the best player. And also, let's not forget, there's still a long, long way to go. And, you know, now Valverde's injured. We don't know how he's going to return from that injury. Hopefully, it's not too bad. I think it's just for a game at the moment, maybe two. But yeah, I think it's too soon to jump onto conclusions. But definitely, he's having a fantastic start to the season.
Mm. Yeah, nasty challenge from Papu Gomez on the Uruguayan. And of course, So close to the World Cup now, every player going down, there'll be, you know, gasps of fear and worry from fans of those respective nations. Okay, then, yes, another win for Real Madrid. They now go on to the Champions League game against Leipzig. They're already qualified, of course, so no danger for them there. As for your team, Barca, a fantastic performance once again after they beat Villarreal 3-0 in midweek. They went one better this time with a 4-0 win over Athletic Club on Ernesto Valverde's return to Camp Nou. Roman, you enjoyed this game, didn't you?
Absolutely. I thought it was a really solid performance from Barcelona. I actually was a bit worried, you know, because Athletic Club have been playing really well. They have been a very strong away side this season. And also Ernesto Valverde coming back kind of scared me a bit after how harsh maybe fans were with him, me included at some point, to be fair. And I thought maybe he'd come back, you know, and haunt us in a way, but luckily that wasn't the case, you know, and Barca had another fantastic game. And I like to see how we solved both matches in different circumstances, because I thought Villarreal were a team which were more laid back, you know. They tried to make the most of their defensive capacities this season, because, I mean, they've been one of the sides to concede fewest goals so far, whereas Athletic Club were the opposite, like pressing really high, trying to go forward, pushing, looking for those counters. So, I mean, in both scenarios, I think we performed really well, and particularly in this one against Athletic Club, we look really strong. I mean, we're regaining control of that midfield, which I thought was maybe one of the problems Barça's Xavi was having recently, where, you know, Barça's midfield wasn't really being so reliable, and it was good to see that we could also play Busquets and De Jong together, moving Pedri more towards the wing, which I thought was a smart idea to have more control, as I was saying. And so in that sense, I think it's important to get the momentum out of these two wins to face Bayern Munich, even though we might play that game already being eliminated from the next round of the Champions League. But despite that, I do think that Barca will want to kind of prove a point that even if they're eliminated, you know, they can still go and beat a Bayern Munich in Europe. So I'm sure that Xavi's going to go all in that game, no matter what happens before between Inter and Victoria Pilsen.
Yeah, a big night at Camp Nou, probably whatever happens. The fans certainly will be up for it and wanting to make a bit of a statement, even if it is futile in terms of that competition. I was going to ask you about the tactical side then. As you say, four midfielders from Xavi, Busquets and De Jong starting together, and Pedri and Gavi, of course. And even when Gavi came off injured, we'll maybe touch on that in a moment, even then he brought on Frank Kessier rather than bringing on an attacker. And this, of course, was at 3-0. So Xavi still wanting to go with this kind of controlled midfield option, which hasn't always been his way so far, opting for more verticality. So, what did you make of that decision? And do you think that's going to continue going forward?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I personally liked it myself because I thought it gave us that control that I was saying. Because, as you mentioned, you know, when we were playing with two wingers, it was more like feeding balls to Rafinha, feeding balls to Ousmane Dembélé, to Ansu, you know, and kind of letting them try and figure it out on their own. And it hadn't really worked because Ousmane wasn't really finding himself, Rafinha either. Ansu did have some moments, but I don't think that was what Barca needed. And here, I think there was a more of a compensated play, you know, between both things, more control in the midfield, but at the same time, letting Ousmane have the ball now and then, letting Ansu get his opportunities, and I think that really worked well. Whether he's going to keep using this against Bayern Munich or in future games, I'm not so sure, because I don't know if he did it because he wanted to maybe give some rest to those wingers, or if he actually was looking for that control. So that will be interesting to see whether in Bayern Munich we can confirm this theory that he actually wants to have more control or not. So I personally wouldn't mind continuing with that because I think it worked really well. But of course, I mean, there's been lots of minutes, lots of players in that midfield are probably quite tired, even though most are going to play for sure. We'll have to see what happens with Gabi, although it doesn't seem very important. I don't know if there could be any consequences, you know, towards him playing that game against Bayern Munich. So if he's unavailable, most likely we'll see two wingers again. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Xavi is looking for now, and if this is part of his, not new Barca, but his new way of making the team click, you know.
It was quite a forceful challenge from Dani Garcia on Gavi. Looked like a knee to the groin area. But yeah, speaking of individual performances, Ousmane Dembélé, the Mosquito, had a lot of bite in this game. A goal and three assists. The first player to do that since Luis Suarez against Alaves in 2019, which, bizarrely enough, was Ernesto Valverde's last home game in charge of Barca. So, in other words, Valverde's had consecutive games at Camp Nou of this event happening. Crazy stuff, Roman. But yeah, how impressed were you with Ousmane Dembélé?
Fantastic stat, by the way, Matt. I really like that. And Ousmane, I mean, he was the Ousmane I saw at the beginning of the season with Xavi. He started off really well, even at the end of last season. I mean, Ousmane was looking like a proper Ousmane, the player we actually wanted here at the club, because it's been so many years of really underperforming, of being so underwhelming. But finally, it seemed like Xavi had recovered him, and then suddenly it's been like a month or two where he's kind of, you know, dissipated and lost all that capacity he had, making really bad decisions. And today he just found himself once again. And it was the Ousmane, as I said, we saw at the beginning of the season, who just looks so capable of getting past any player, of finding assists really easily. And, you know, his shots can be really, really dangerous when he's feeling comfortable. So I'm happy to see that. I hope he can keep it up, because he really needs this consistency, not just for himself, but also to kind of convince Barca fans, because there is a big division in Barcelona between those that really like Ousmane and those that are still not convinced at all and wouldn't mind him leaving next summer. So, I mean, for him, for his sake, and for fans' sake, and everyone's sake at Barcelona, of course, I think it would be great if he could keep this up for longer, because at this level, he is a very, very good player.
Yeah, he certainly turned on the style at Camp Nou on Sunday night. Well, rounding off the top three then, we've got another Frenchman in the headlines, because it was Antoine Griezmann show at the Benito Villamarín as Atleti won 2-1 against Real Betis.
Del Atlético de Madrid, Olímpico, el Principito, Antoine Griezmann.
Betis's first home defeat of the season in La Liga, and there was a lot of French flavour on show. An Olympic goal from Griezmann opened the scoring before another flowing move put him one-on-one with the keeper, Rui Silva. He doubled the lead. Perhaps Rui Silva should have done better. Nabil Fekir then came on, and he was pivotal in changing the game. He scored a direct free kick, and they nearly got level with an Alex Moreno header, which hit the crossbar late on. But Atleti have now won 5 away games out of 6. Very impressive from them. and they're up to third now. Is this kind of this Griezmann-centered Cholo team now beginning to look more like the Atleti of old?
I think so, yeah, absolutely. It's more of the defensive, we could say, closed down side that looks for those counterattacks that we used to know from El Cholo, because I thought last season he kind of changed a bit in that sense where the team seemed to be more offensive, and I think that never really worked out for him or his players. And I think Pellegrini summed up this game pretty well, because he said the team that went out to not lose won, and the team that went out to win lost. And maybe it's a bit bad sportsmanship from Pellegrini, but I think it does sum up the game pretty well, because Atletico weren't the team generating the chances, to be honest. Their first goal kind of came out of nowhere, and Betis, you know, they were pushing. They're a more offensive side. They tried to go ahead and get the goals, but when Atletico are really close themselves down really well, and you know, are capable of defending at that level, it's hard to score against them. And yeah, Fekir gave them a chance at the end, but it's really difficult. And Griezmann, as you were talking about him, he's just playing so well. He looks like that fantastic Griezmann they sold to Barca, who we haven't seen in quite a while. And now that Barca reached an agreement with Atletico to sell him for a cheaper price, now he starts scoring and becoming super important. And you think like, oof, this level, we certainly could have sold him for those 40, 50 million that Atleti owed us. But I think that's we're already past that, and we can't really change and get any more money out of him now. So credit to Atletico for winning this game and for winning the Griezmann, we could say, dilemma, you know, because they're going to keep him for a very good price.
Absolutely. Yeah, very impressive performance from him. And Atleti held on for a big 3 points. They now face a must-win game in the Champions League in midweek if they want to maintain hopes of reaching the knockout stages. Betis, of course, already qualified from their Europa League group. That's all we have time for the first half, but stick with us. We'll round up all the rest of the matches from the weekend, including an emotional game in Ciutat de Valencia for Villarreal, and all the other games as well, including five-star Rayo. Stay tuned.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown. It's our match day 11 recap. I'm here with Roman Darque from Barcelona. Villarreal had a very eventful game against Almeria on Sunday evening. It was a 94th minute winner from Nico Jackson, and it was an emotional game in which they honoured their vice president, Yaneth, who passed away this week. Almeria took the lead through Gonzalo Melero, who scored his first goal for the club in his old home ground, of course, coming from Levante. And he dedicated it to his newborn child. There's a great story as well. Cristina Bea on Relevo has told us this story. He actually signed for Almeria while he was in the hospital when his baby had some complications. So a really nice moment for him to dedicate that goal there, scoring his first goal. And then Almerian player Alex Baena equalised for Villarreal, lifted his shirt to reveal a dedication to Jan Ether on an undershirt. And of course, the referee then had to show him a yellow card by the letter of the law, which was his second, so he was therefore sent off, to the consternation of many. I think common sense probably should have applied here, Roman. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was ridiculous. In the first place, it's ridiculous to give a player a yellow card for taking off their shirt or for showing... well, technically, the rule says that you get a yellow card if you cover your head or you take off your shirt. So, I mean, he covered his head for a second when he was taking it off, and he didn't really take it off completely, so I don't really understand why he got the yellow. But in any case, even if it was a yellow, I mean, I still think it's ridiculous, and especially taking into account what the message was, what the situation is for Villarreal, for the team. You know, they're all going through a lot. It's a big blow for them. I think Paco explained this pretty well, how important Jan Ether was to Villarreal. So honestly, I understand that the ref has to apply the rules, but come on, as you said, common sense has to apply here, you know. And I just find it ridiculous that the ref went ahead with this. Hopefully they could maybe cancel that yellow card in the future through the court or whatever, but I mean, it's pretty disappointing to see that when you value something so much as a person and you want to pay your respects in a way, I don't know, it really put Villarreal against a tight rope, you know, and they were in a very complicated situation. But that's what it is, you know, it's football, and refs do what they consider is the right thing, I guess.
Interestingly enough, it's the same referee, De Burgos Bengoechea, who showed Gerard Moreno the yellow card at the Civitas Metropolitana earlier in the season when Gerard Moreno did his dedication to his daughter with the hands behind the ears. So very interesting that he's given the yellow card to both there. After the game, Villarreal's Twitter account posted perhaps the tweet of the day, saying a message declaring, "This shirt is worth a million expulsions." So yeah, probably everyone's sentiments there entirely. But yeah, massive win for Villarreal. 94th minute winner, as we said. Nico Jackson, another youngster on the score sheet. They're up to 7th now. And yes, it feels like a much-needed win for Villarreal after that 3-0 defeat at Camp Nou. Elsewhere in the European picture, La Real's incredible run of 8 wins consecutively came to a shuddering halt against Real Valladolid. It's back-to-back wins now for Pucela, as Sergio León continued his own purple patch. Interestingly, Pacheta's career La Liga wins, 21% of them have come this very month, 3 out of 14. So encouraging signs for them. Roman, what did you take from this game?
Yeah, I mean, Valladolid are beginning to look stronger and stronger. I did think they would be contenders for relegation, but at the moment, I mean, in the last 5 games, they've got 3 wins and a draw. That's definitely good work by Pacheta, and from this game you can tell that they're improving defensively, they're improving offensively. They were struggling to get goals, and now, for example, in Sergio León, they've found someone who can really get those goals for them, and you can just tell he's in that moment where anything could go in for him, you know, and he's feeling really good and comfortable. And he's not a player that particularly strikes as one of a top, we could say, like a Spanish striker. But, you know, now he's in that incredible moment, and Pacheta's making the most of it. And the team as a whole, you know, they look really good. They look really solid. And to stop Real Sociedad from that amazing streak is impressive from Valladolid, to be honest. So we'll have to keep an eye out for them, because if they can keep up this level, they could really save themselves from relegation really comfortably at the end of the season.
An impressive win for them, and a bit of a blip there for Real Sociedad. But they do stay in fourth, given Betis lost as well. Over at Mestalla, Edinson Cavani scored once again to maintain his good run, but they were shocked by Mallorca, as Vedat Muriqi and Kangin Lee, of all people, came back to Mestalla to score the winner for Mallorca.
Esta es tuya, márcalo, márcalo. Ahí está Cangilli, pégale. Gol, 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 gol. Pero no pidas perdón, qué golazo. Ya lo decían. Mejor pedir perdón que permiso. Ahí estaba Cangilli. Vaya jugada Mallorca.
This would have been an absolute sting in the tail for Valencia fans, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in the first place, when they lost Kangin Lee, they were pretty disappointed, and now to have him come back and score a winner late into the game, it's definitely a big blow, because Valencia are doing things really well lately. Cavani is looking better and better, and the team as a whole is good. I mean, I like Gattuso's Valencia, but it's true that there's still that unpredictability towards Valencia, you know, because sometimes they're performing really well, and then they just are incapable of getting the results they need. And at home against Mallorca, you did expect them to maybe at least grab a draw. You know, they should have got at least a point there. There is some controversy in relation to the penalty given to Mallorca, where apparently there's a camera which shows you that Nico doesn't actually touch the attacker there in the eye, but I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. When you look at the replays, I can understand why they gave a penalty that might be harsh on Valencia, but still, despite that, you'd expect Valencia to get a better result. But credit to Mallorca also, who are doing really good this season with Aguirre. I also thought they would be contenders, but you know, they're keeping stable, they're getting results. They were going through a bad streak, but now with that win, this really helps them to catch a breath, we could say.
Yeah, similar position to Real Valladolid in that kind of upper half of the bottom half of the table, if that makes sense. So yeah, really encouraging for them. And once again, having Morici back, and then they were able to score goals again. He is so fundamental to the way they play. And as Paco said in the last podcast, again, he said Valencia would be probably title contenders if the first halves were counted. But of course, in the second halves, probably a relegation candidate. That's how Jekyll and Hyde their two halves of games have been. So let's see how they get on in their next few matches. Over to Vallecas, who started off the weekend on Saturday lunchtime, and they absolutely smashed Cadiz 5-1. A brace from Florian Lejeune, who became the first player to score two different direct free kicks this season. And I remember tweeting, I bet nobody had that on their bingo card for most likely to score two free kicks first this season. Yeah, Rayo, decent home form now. Unbeaten in four after that long run without a win at home. And yeah, they scored five or more in La Liga for the first time in over a decade. It was a really great performance from Andoni Iraola's men, wasn't it?
Yeah, great performance. And also, I'd say a pleasant performance, easy performance in the end, because, you know, playing against 10 men and then playing against 9 men really made it easy for them. I mean, the first goal came after the sending off of Carcelén through the penalty spot. Isi took the penalty instead of Trejo, who's the usual guy, but he missed the previous one, so I'm guessing they decided to change things there. From there on, you know, it was just Rayo. They had 28 shots in total, whereas Cadiz, of course, it's a miracle they even got a goal, you know, in the end, thanks to an own goal from Bayou, I think it was. So, you know, there's not really much more to say here. Rayo were just the dominant side because of the sending offs that completely changed the face of the game. And from there on, there was not really a chance for Cadiz, especially after the second sending off. That was just game over for them.
Yeah, finished off 9-10, didn't it? Mm-hmm. Dramatic game. With plenty of cards and plenty of goals. Great entertainment for the neutral, I'm sure. But over in Cornellà, your neck of the woods, or at least in Barcelona itself, Espanyol 2, Elche 2. Another topsy-turvy game. Elche took the lead through Pere Mia, who's been in decent form since Jorge Almirón returned. Then Espanyol recovered to go 2-1 up, but then they conceded late to Gonzalo Verdú. It feels like we've seen this game already from Espanyol quite a lot this season, doesn't it?
Yeah, they're really struggling to find solid home form, you know, and especially against a side like Elche, who we know have a new manager, are kind of bouncing back a bit. But still, they should be capable of getting a win against a side like this. And I think one of their problems, serious problems, is in the goal, you know, because both goalkeepers, Lecomte and Álvaro Fernández, aren't really performing to the expected level. In this case, it was Lecomte. I think in both goals, honestly, he could have done much more. They aren't really helping the team in that sense, because, you know, that's allowing the rivals to score relatively not easy goals, but, you know, concede too easily for the team in Espanyol's case. And despite Espanyol's insistence to try and get the win, they had more possession towards the end, tried to get that 3-2, but it wasn't enough, you know. And it's not every day that Joselu is going to score a goal for them, you know. So in this case, he didn't get the winner. But Espanyol need more, you know. I think they also need time. It's a new manager, it's a new project. Diego Martinez just came in, and we know what he can do. We've seen it with Granada. He's fantastic. So you can also see the team is pretty united when they celebrate the goals, when, you know, they're together. You can almost kind of tell Diego Martinez is building that unity we did see at Granada. So hopefully, in a matter of time, things will be better for Espanyol. But harsh draw for them, because at home against Elche, they should get more.
Yeah, I was going to ask this. I mean, they're laying in 13th with 10 points, but they're only one clear of the drop. Is, you know, these continual kind of finding different ways to drop points, do you think the pressure might be starting to build on Diego Martinez, or do you think that there's still a lot of faith in him to be able to bring his project through?
I think there's faith in him because they know what kind of manager he is, and they had like a project set up together. And also, let's not forget that in the summer there were lots of problems because Raúl de Tomás was meant to be sold for a lot more money, and with that money from Raúl de Tomás, they were supposed to bring in more signings, at least two or three. So I think the fact that there was this beef with de Tomás and it didn't work out, and they didn't manage to sell him on time for a good price and really actually work the market properly, I think that changed things a bit. So I wouldn't be surprised if towards the winter transfer market a couple of signings come in to try and strengthen, you know, that squad and improve things. But at the moment, I wouldn't say he's under pressure. Espanyol, you know, despite only being 1 point from the drop, they are 13th in the standings. There's still a lot of points to be played. Lots of things can happen at the moment. So I think it's soon to say that he's at any risk.
Yeah, fair point. And as you say, given the weird nature of this season, the transfer market is only a few games away, really, in terms of La Liga fixtures. So true. If they can just kind of, I think a lot of clubs will be thinking this, just plod along a little bit until the World Cup, and then they can reassess in the new year. As for Elche, they do remain the only winless side in La Liga, 4 points from 11 games, 5 from safety. Yeah, it's looking quite bleak from them, but they did show some fight. So that's something to build on, perhaps, as you say. Poor old Carlos Clerc, 32 games now without a win in La Liga, taking his time at Levante and now these first few games with Elche, the longest run in Spanish football history. So hopefully he won't feel too bad this evening after another game without a win. The final game we need to talk about was also in Catalonia this weekend. It was Girona against Osasuna. 1-1 it finished. A cracking opener from Quique Barca was cancelled out before half-time by David López. Girona edged out of the bottom three, but they will be back there if Getafe pick up points against Celta in the Monday night game. Osasuna dropped to eighth, courtesy of Villarreal's win. But yeah, Girona, 6 games without a win, including 4 defeats in that run. Is it time to be a bit worried if you're a Girona fan?
Yeah, I think it is, honestly, because the team should be doing a bit better, especially at home. You know, I thought that they would be capable of getting more points. A draw against Osasuna, I guess, isn't too bad because Osasuna are a strong side. They have started pretty well this season, you know, but still, you know, they're still dropping lots of points where they should be getting more. And there were some rotations in this case from Michel. I was surprised not to see Stuani start, given he's now fully recovered, you know, and we know how important he is, and he's been scoring lately, even though it was through the penalty spot. But also he gave Riquelme a rest, you know, he moved things around also in the fullbacks, but it didn't pay off in the end, and Girona are suffering, you know, and it seems like they might be really serious candidates for relegation if things don't change quickly, or maybe in this case, if we compare, you were asking me before about Diego Martinez, if he's at any risk or in a delicate situation, I would say that Michel is closer to that situation, you know, so if results don't come soon before the games end before the World Cup, I could see something happening there because it will also give the club time, you know, to find someone else to get him to work with the squad. So when the World Cup finishes, he's already, you know, got them more integrated in that sense. So we'll see what happens. But at the moment, it doesn't look great for Michel or for Girona.
Well, they've got a nice game coming up away to Real Madrid. So I'm sure they'll do fine in that one. But yeah, jokes aside, after that, they have Athletic at home and then Elche away. So you'd imagine they'd certainly like at least 4 points from those two games to feel a little bit more comfortable before the World Cup. Well, thank you very much, Roman, for all your time and thoughts on the weekend's games. Celta against Getafe is your Monday night game before the European action resumes. Barca, of course, all but out of the Champions League. Real Madrid through. Atleti are the team that have it all to play for. Sevilla will be trying to finish third and make sure they get into the Europa League. And as for the Europa League, Betis and Real Sociedad are already through, as are Villarreal, but they will all try and make sure they top their respective groups for a better draw. Thank you for listening. Be sure to check out our Substack, laligalowdown.substack.com, for all our written content, and follow us on Twitter at La Liga Lowdown. We'll be back with a preview podcast in midweek for next weekend's fixtures. But from all of us here, it's adios.
Legend, chuta golazo! Gol, 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 gol del Rayo. Libre directo que bota Leyen al palo donde estaba el portero. Al Cádiz le toca sufrir, al Rayo le toca disfrutar.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.